Hello, everybody. Halloween is upon us, and it's often said that the boundary between this world and the mysterious one beyond is not just a midnight phenomenon. It's always there lurking at the fringes of our awareness, whether you find yourself in broad daylight or dark of night. The unexplained refuses to adhere to a timetable. Today, we welcome Charisse Williams, a solo practitioner who's mastered the art of harmonizing the mystical with the empirical, guiding us through the spectral realms with a discerning and balanced approach. She's an extraordinary individual, author, and someone who has actually mixed traditional Christianity and also embraces her calling as a modern day witch. She investigates some of the most haunted locations across the country, from abandoned sanitariums to ancient graveyards. Wouldn't touch either of those with a 10-foot pole myself, but we're going to find out why she does. Armed with a myriad of equipment like K2 meters, infrared cameras, and dowsing rods, she's delved deep into the paranormal phenomena, debunking myths while also validating inexplicable experiences that defy explanation. So let's sit back, relax, grab a snack, do whatever it is that you're going to do or want to do, and let's get on board with Charisse. So all I can say is, here we go. Well, that was fun. My computer just cut out right there while we were talking also, so it happens. Spooky. How
Very
are you,
spooky.
Charisse?
Hi. That was probably the most epic intro I've ever received, so thank
Were
you.
you chair dancing? Because I was. Oh my gosh. Welcome everybody to A Funny Way of Looking, where diverse minds meet. I'm just gonna chill out today. Okay, we have diverse words and open minds, diverse thoughts and open minds. We meet them here together. Today we are going to talk about ghost hunting. We're going to talk about Charisse Williams and all the things that she does. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing just fantastic right now. I'm going to ask you the hardest question of the day, and then we are going to dive right into this epicness. Who do you want to do a shout out to? That's the toughest question of the day.
Yes, my family, both living and past, and my whole spiritual team.
I love that. Let's jump in. I've got some good questions here before, and most people don't know you yet, but they will after this show. What is it that you do, and how did you get started in the paranormal?
What is it that I do? That is a broad, that's a big topic.
Let's start off with a snapshot of your background. How about
I'll
that?
start with how I got interested in the paranormal. So I've
There
always been drawn to, ghost stories and Halloween and creepy things. And I actually had my first paranormal experience when I was about 6 or 7 at my grandmother's house.
we go.
I saw a complete shadow figure walk past me. It even turned and then disappeared. And at that young age, you would think that a kid would be terrified and go running from the room. But I just sat there kind of mystified. My aunt came in the room and I told her what happened. And then that's when she broke the news to me that the house was haunted. They just didn't want to tell me because they didn't want to freak me out. And it didn't freak me out. If anything, I mean, I was a little uneasy, of course, but more than anything, I was so curious. And so that kind of really was what jump-started my interest, my lifelong interest in the paranormal and things unseen.
Yes. One thing I want to get into right away is a lot of people look at Christianity, they look at witchcraft, which you are also into, and they look at the supernatural, and those things never meet. How did you pull them all together, and how do you explain that to people?
Because really they do all meet. But the three things you just mentioned are all kind of their own path, but they all crisscross at times and they all kind of run side by side. It really kind of angers some people when I combine Christianity and witchcraft. But really they're not so different. I mean, we literally have Jesus working these miracles and essentially magic in a way. The whole spiritual aspect, I mean, if you look at like different religions across the world, they all talk about kind of this world unseen, this other world. They talk about angels. So it all kind of, I don't know, it all really meshes when you really kind of start to look at it.
So, you talk, I agree with you, by the way. It's like, How is this spirit any different than this spirit? You just call it by a bigger name or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. How do you actually meld them together? Because there are certain traditions, I guess, in witchcraft, and there are certain traditions in Christianity. How do those meld together for you?
Like in regards to just my everyday spiritual practice? Or
yeah, just, and then how do you tie it all into ghosts also?
Okay. I do a lot of praying. It surprises some people to find out that I do pray to Jesus. I pray to Mother Mary. I grew up in the church. My one grandmother's Lutheran, the other one is Catholic. So I spend a lot of time in the church. And I try to follow the teachings of Jesus, all of these topics could really kind of branch off and be their own deep dive topics. when I've been in some kind of scary paranormal situations, supernatural situations, I pray to Jesus, I pray to God. So that's kind of the biggest, most basic way that I kind of incorporate that. I mentioned to you the other day about doing spell candles and praying, you know, I may be lighting a candle, but I'm also saying a prayer. And really that's no different than, you go to church and you light candles, right? Especially in the Catholic church, mm-hmm. You go up and you light a candle. So how is that really any different with me doing it at my house in my sacred space? I just sprinkle some extra things onto the candle, like some herbs or whatever. Those are kind of some of the basic ways that I incorporate my Christianity into my practice.
Okay. Now let's talk about ghosts.
Yes.
Because that's where we want to go. Now, when's the first time you saw a ghost was at your grandmother's house, which she decided to let you know is haunted. So how did you get into actual ghost hunting then?
So that didn't really happen until later. I did seances and stuff with my friends. We would try the Ouija board and everything. But actual ghost hunting didn't really happen until later in my life. And I like to thank the show Ghost Hunters, which mm-hmm. aired on Sci-Fi, a million years ago. But they were really the first show that I watched that I was like, wow, I've read about, paranormal investigating and researchers and parapsychologists and everything in books. I didn't know that just like anybody could go and do this. And I'm like, here's these people. They don't have, they're not parapsychologists. They're just people who had an interest in this, and they go and they try to debunk things, and whatever they're left with is potentially an actual haunting or evidence of a haunting. They really inspired me, and I got onto Craigslist of all places. And I happened to find a group that was looking for another member, a ghost hunting group, and I joined and went out with them, and that's how I got started.
I wasn't
known looking for strangers on Craigslist to go to abandoned buildings with in the middle of the night.
I was just going to let that one go.
Not my smartest move. I did meet them in the daytime first. Like we had a meeting and anyway.
Okay. I got you. I have to ask you this because I've asked other guests this. You said that when we were little, we used to play with the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. Most of the people I know won't touch a Ouija board with a 20-foot pole.
Yeah.
And whether they're believers or not. Uh-huh. When you did the Ouija board, what did you find? What happened?
It would either be, it depended on who I was using it with. Sometimes it would just be, I think the other kids getting kind of freaked out. And so they would just be silly with it and make it spell out, cuss words or inappropriate things. And, but the few times that I have had it actually spell things out, it kind of spelled out some not great things. One time, it was actually the last time that I had used it. It spelled out, I was using it with my aunt. And it was saying something not kind that I know I wouldn't have said about myself. And I know my aunt wouldn't have said this about me. And yeah, so I don't mind the Ouija board. I think the Ouija board honestly is a tool just like any other spiritual tool or ghost hunting tool. I don't think that going in with a K2 meter and asking, can you light this up for yes? Or, leave it dark for no. How is that really any different than using a Ouija board and saying, can you move this to yes or to no? It's a tool just like anything else, but it's your mindset going into it that matters. And because I have had some very not pleasant Ouija board experiences or experiences that I believe stemmed from my use of the Ouija board, I have such this ingrained disconnect and kind of a fear, honestly, of the Ouija board and what might come through, that whenever I sit down to the Ouija board, that's what I would be bringing, is that that fearful energy, which then attracts maybe trickster energies or, you know, spirits that maybe just kind of want to mess with you. Whereas I have no problem picking up a K2 meter, or any other piece of equipment, spiritual equipment, tarot cards, pendulum, or anything. I don't bring that fear with me. And I think that that's the big thing with the Ouija board, is so many people bring that fear with them because of what they've seen in movies or what they've heard, you know, scary stories they've heard from other people. And so they have that fear and they sit down, put their hands on the planchette, and then they're bringing that with them.
Gotcha. I gotcha. And by the way, is the Ouija board talking directly to spirits, or is it something different?
I've often wondered, and I think it's the same with, because I use pendulums and dowsing rods in my practice and with ghost hunting. And I don't know, I'm not 100% sure on how I think it works. Some think that it works, the spirit is actually moving your hand. They're kind of putting their hand on yours and moving it. I kind of think more that it works along the way of, so like in hypnotherapy, there's ideomotor response, which is, you know, if the person's being hypnotized and the therapist may say, you know, if the answer is yes, lift your finger up, and you're kind of, it's an unconscious movement, but your subconscious is answering. And so your hand does move. I think that that's kind of what's happening with the planchette, the Ouija board, or the pendulums. It's kind of your brain sending these little ideomotor signifiers to your hand to move it, and you're not consciously aware of it. Now, are you making the answers up, or is maybe there a spirit telling you the answer is yes, and your intuitive mind is hearing the answer, which then sends this signal to your brain to move your hand in the appropriate direction? I think that makes the most sense to me.
Okay. Okay. I'm on board with it. You let it go. I'm agreeing.
I'm like, I could just talk and talk and talk. So I want myself to like breathe and let you talk every now and then.
No, I'm fascinated just listening, actually. What I want to talk about ghost hunting. What was the first place that you went and you said, you know what, I'm going to look for some ghosts here? What was it? What was that like?
I honestly can't really. Where was the first place that I went? I think that it was Prospect Place Mansion, which is an old mansion here in Ohio. Tons of history. It was part of the Underground Railroad. It's beautiful building. And I think that that's the first place that I actually did like a real ghost hunt at. At least, actually, no, that's a big lie. that was a few locations later. My first location was a place called Malabar Farm. There's a mansion on that farm. It was Lewis Bromfield, the author. He owned it. And that was my first actual investigation.
Okay. Now, that's your first investigation. Mm-hmm. When was the first time that you actually, when you were hunting, because I know you've got your grandmother's thing, but you were hunting for ghosts and you found something, you go, this is a ghost. It's not just a creaky floorboard.
I mean, I don't know if it's just me. I mean, I find ghosts kind of everywhere, honestly. They're kind of all over the place. So yeah, I mean, there's some places that I've gone to where I'm like, this doesn't feel, and I'm not going to name the locations. But there are places where other people are like, this is so haunted. And then I've gone to it a few times and I'm like, I'm just not feeling it. Because a lot of the time it can be just a creaky floorboard. And you do get people that, you know, haven't investigated too often. And they just go in and they get really excited and they hear any sound and they're like, that was a ghost. So while I do think ghosts pretty much are everywhere or can be everywhere, not everything is haunted. Not everything is a ghost.
Now, by the way, I've always wondered this, if there's ghosts around us all the time, do we walk through them or do they move out of the way when we walk toward them?
I'm not really sure. I think both. You know, I think we've all kind of like, well, I don't know if we all have, but have you ever walked through somewhere and you kind of just get like a shiver? Or you walk through and you kind of feel just like, oh, like, what was that little bit of static? Or even sometimes it may feel like you walked through a spider web and there's no spider web anywhere. Has that ever happened to you?
It has.
Okay.
I didn't have a K2 meter to figure it out, but yeah.
I think that that could potentially be a spirit or some type of energy or entity that you are either walking through or walking near.
Okay. Now, there's a couple of things that I've talked with you about or I've read about you. And one is the laughing ghost that you actually recorded.
Yes.
Tell me how you got a recording of a ghost on a recording of a ghost. That's it.
So this was at Indiana State Sanatorium, which is my favorite haunted location I've ever been to, ever. I highly recommend it to anybody. They also do daytime tours. I swear they need to like let me investigate there once a month for free, which for how much I talk about and promote this location. but you can do daytime tours, nighttime investigations. And so that's where I was. And one of the buildings on the property used to be a nursing home, and we were investigating the nursing home. And the nursing home is set up as kind of like a cross or an X with the nurse's station in the center. And we were near the nurse's station, kind of standing in one of the hallways. And the whole night we were there, our walkie-talkies kept going off for no reason. And so it was kind of like, what the heck is happening? So we're standing there talking, the walkie-talkie goes off. And we're like, what the heck? And then in that moment, you hear just clear as day, sounded like an old man, just go, like, cracking up. Like he thought it was hilarious that he's setting off these walkie-talkies. And I have never been more startled investigating my entire life. I've heard disembodied voices before. You know, you hear a whisper, you may hear a voice or something. I've never had a voice that loud, that clear. It sounded like there was a man standing right next to me laughing. I was so startled. I told everybody to shut up because some people were still talking. I was like, shut up, shut up. I was like, I'm sorry, but did you guys just hear that? We played it back and we caught it on audio. And then the crazy part of that is, come to find out, I was interviewing a woman who used to work at the nursing home when it was in operation. Uh-huh. And she mentioned that down that hallway was a patient who used to like to play pranks on people. He was a big jokester. And so I was like, I bet you anything, that's who was, you know, just kind of messing with us, setting off our walkie-talkies, and thought he was hilarious for doing that. So
yeah, you're just freaking me out here. I've got a little walkie-talkie sitting right over here.
What if it goes off right now?
Yeah. No. If it goes off right now, I'm moving. Okay, that's all I'm saying. But what is the, why do ghosts want to stick around and talk to us? Are they in a different dimension? Are they in this dimension, in this world, but we just can't see them? Like, what are ghosts and why? Why are ghosts?
There is a lot of different theories. And I mean, that's one of the things that I love about this field, is that there's just so many possibilities and theories, and you can go down this direction with it, or you can take, you know, the topic this direction. But at the end of the day, like as of right now, none of us really know 100% what ghosts are and what the spirit world is. We have good theories, but, you know, there's theories that ghosts stick around. You know, a person dies and maybe they were not a very nice person in their life, and now they're kind of worried, like, well, what's waiting for me on the other side? Like, I don't know if I want to leave right now, because what if hell is real and I don't want to be condemned to hell? So I'm just going to hang out right here. There's theories that people who die very quickly or traumatically may be kind of stuck in this almost like confused dreamlike state where they know that they're not alive how they were, but they're also like not fully aware that they're dead. There could be people that just really liked being alive. They loved life. They loved Earth. Maybe they loved their house that they had, and they're just not ready to leave it yet, and they want to hang out. So there's really kind of a lot of different possibilities of what is a ghost.
Okay. Have you ever run into a situation? The sanatorium, just the word scares me. But have you ever run into a situation where you go in, you've got your meters, things are going on and off, and you are just like, I got to get out of here because this is way too freaky?
Normally I'm very vocal, and I will kind of voice when I'm like freaked out. I was spending the night at this haunted mansion one night, and I was assigned to sleep in this one room that we kind of had a lot of activity and just uncomfortable feelings in. And I was very verbally not pleased with it, but I still did it. So very rarely am I like leaving a location. More than anything, if something's happening, I'm like, let's stay and figure this out. Or I hear a noise, I'm like going towards the noise, as freaked out as I might be. But there have been, it was actually at the sanatorium. There's a spirit on the fifth floor of the mental health facility that's on the location on the property. And the spirit there is in life, he just, you know, he had mental health problems and he was not a very nice person. There's actual accounts from employees there. They're pretty sure they know who this individual was. And yet in life, he just made people's lives miserable there, the other patients. And we're pretty sure that he's the one who's there. And he kept trying to get the other investigator that I was with to go off on her own. Like, she kept feeling like she should go off by herself and go into this room. And I'm like, no, like, I was kind of being her protector. And he was not happy about that. He even tried to kind of like, I don't know if he was necessarily latching on to her, but she kind of did feel like her energy was being messed with. So I had to cleanse her energy. He didn't like that. And so at one point in the investigation, we're walking and I just kind of like hit a wall, an energetic wall almost. And I, tears welled up in my eyes and I'm like, he's not happy at all right now. I was kind of getting the image of Jack Torrance in The Shining, the scene where he's going down the halls and he's angry and he hits the wall at one point. It was almost like that, like energy. And so I did at that point, I left the building and I had to go, to ground myself, I like to put my hands on a tree and do some breathing. So I had to go do that. And I cleansed myself with my crystal, said a prayer, and then went back in and set my boundary with him once I composed myself. And ever since then, ever since I set my boundary with him, I mean, he does come close and kind of try to, you know, poke at me a little bit, but nothing like I'd experienced with that.
So inside the sanatorium, which still just freaks me out because of the word, are there friendly ghosts also, or is it most of the people were, you know, had mental health issues?
Most of them are pretty friendly. It seems like there's just kind of that one guy. And from my, I haven't investigated there in over a year, so I'm curious to go back and see if it's changed at all. But when I was there, I gathered that he kind of controlled that building at night. And then during the day, the other spirits kind of got to do what they wanted. So it definitely felt a little more intense at night, the energy does. And then during the day, it feels a little more light. And then the spirits in the nursing home, it's honestly, other than the jokester who does like to play pranks, and there is somebody who whistles in the nursing home. There is, unfortunately, a female there who we've heard her crying multiple times. And it's kind of just more of a sad energy in the nursing home.
Are there places that you've gone beside the sanitarium where it's been said that they are haunted and you've gone in and you've actually debunked it and gone like, no, this is, you know, something that we can explain and I can show you exactly how it happens?
Yeah, I mean, there's the one location that I'm thinking of. Again, I'm not going to throw them under the bus because that's the thing too, you know, and that's one of the reasons it's been so hard to prove that ghosts exist is because you could go into a building one night and just you're hearing voices and footsteps and you can't debunk anything because everything that's happening is most likely paranormal. And then you can go the next day and it's just quiet crickets. However, I have been to this one particular location more than one time. And each time it's just, there's not much. And there is, there's pretty much always a bat in one of the hallways. And it happens to be the hallway where people say that they see a shadow move quickly through the hall. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, if you don't know what you're looking for and you aren't aware that there's a bat in that hall, you could easily see a bat flying through the dark and think that, oh, I'm seeing, you know, a spectral shadow. So yeah, that's one of those instances where I'm like, how haunted is this?
Okay. Now there are people listening who are going like, okay, I want to go out and I want to find some ghosts because Halloween is happening in like a week. Yes. And if they want to go out and find ghosts, what do they need to do?
What do they need to do? First of all, just be open to it. Be open to the possibility. So often our logical mind kicks in. We may have an experience or we may intuitively pick up something and like, I think I'm feeling something in this room. But then our logical mind immediately kicks in and says, no, you're not. You don't see anything, do you? There's nothing here. So be open to the possibility that, you know, what you are feeling or seeing or hearing could potentially be a ghost. It could be a haunting. But at the same time, look for things, you know, if there's kind of if there's a crack in the window and the breeze is blowing through, that could be making the door move or the curtain move. So kind of look for logical explanations while at the same time being open to the possibility. And then people say there's kind of like 50-50, I think, in the paranormal community of are cemeteries haunted or not? And I find that they are. I think they're kind of more of like a meeting place for spirits. So go find a cemetery in your area.
That's what you do. Oh my gosh. Like, I've moved into my apartment and I've got my dishes and my silverwares in one drawer, right? Mm-hmm. And they're in this little tray. And I make sure that the tray is always pulled up to the edge of the drawer before I close it. And I close it really slow. Mm-hmm. And I will wait. Mm-hmm. I'll open it a couple hours later and it's pushed to the back. And I've been trying to figure out if it's just my refrigerator rumbling it and pushing stuff to the back, mm-hmm. or stuff like this. How do I find out if it's really a ghost or if there's some kind of creaking in my floor that's making it happen?
Well, I would say if you've ruled out all of the, you know, logical explanations, like, you know, if you've checked that the drawer is even and it's not kind of at a slope and things like that, you know, if you're left with no logical answers, then what do you have? You have something that's potentially unexplainable. And that's where you can rely on your intuition. You know, what is your gut telling you? What are you actually feeling? Mm-hmm. And then if you want to take it a step further, you could do things like a divination. You could pull some tarot cards, you could use a pendulum, or you could even whip out some ghost hunting equipment, and see what you got.
Yeah. I'll have to invite you over to do that one day.
I'd be happy to.
Right now I'm happy with it just like sliding back and I just put it back where it's supposed to be every day. And it happens multiple times a day.
Interesting. Yeah. They're trying to tell you something.
I don't know. Now, would we be able to figure out if it's relatives of mine because they've never lived here, or if it's somebody that's been here and something weird happened and they're just like playing with me? How do we find out?
It could, depending on, you know, the information that you receive during, like, if you do any divination or if you use something like a spirit box, which flips through the radio stations really quick. If you've watched any ghost shows, you've seen it and it makes the static. Depending what, you know, words or phrases come through that, you can figure it out. Also too, I mean, a good way, because our ancestors and our spiritual team is always around us. And sometimes they are really trying to get our attention. And that's when it's, I think, good to rely on your intuition. And because, I mean, I can tell like when a spirit is around me, because I get little just visitors that come and go from my house all the time. And I can usually tell, is this an ancestor or a relative or even a spirit guide, or is this some kind of a stranger? And usually if it's one of your ancestors or a family, it feels familiar to you. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how else to describe it. It feels familiar, you know? I mean, think about how it is like if you go to lunch with somebody that you just met, a blind date or something, and then you go to lunch with an old friend, the vibe feels totally different. It's kind of the same thing when a spirit is around you, one that you are familiar with versus one that you may not know at all.
Gotcha. So when I smell my mom's perfume, that's a big hint.
Yes, that would be a big hint.
It doesn't mean I have a brain injury and it's like, oh, that's the part of the brain that makes smell. And then you're just smelling your mom's
perfume.
I always
tell people go to the doctor because, I mean, unfortunately there are sometimes some like actual physical, mental or physical mm-hmm. things that can mimic a haunting or like intuition. So if you are ever actually kind of concerned about that, then always go check that out. However, yeah more often than not, if you're smelling her perfume, it's probably her stopping by.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Hey, mom. Where are some places that you want to go that you've not been able to yet and you just want to check them out?
Oh my gosh. So speaking of like old hospitals and stuff, Pavelia Island in Italy, I would love to go there. If we're talking overseas, here in the United States, I always wanted to go to Alcatraz, but I don't even think that they have it open for tours anymore. I think
really
that's what I heard. Don't quote me on that. But I heard that they were going to be just shutting down even just like the daytime tours because it was just kind of getting too crumbly and not safe, but I would love to go to Alcatraz.
I bet you can hook that up.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I have a feeling that you could hook that up somehow.
I hope so. Oh, yeah. And then here in Ohio, there's the Ridges, which is Athens Lunatic Asylum. It's part of Ohio University now. I think they only use the first floor of the building and the rest is just abandoned. Oh my gosh. Nice. That I wanted to get into forever. They don't open it for tours and they don't do ghost hunting. So if anybody watching has connections to the Athens Lunatic Asylum, please let me in.
You've written a whole book about this too, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah, there you go. So it's the Witch's Guide to Ghost Hunting.
And I always say this book, even if you don't fancy yourself a witch, this book is filled with all kinds of great information. If you're brand new to ghost hunting, it has a whole ghost hunting 101 section. That's pretty much kind of what the first half of the book is. It talks about what are ghosts, what are different types of spirits. It also talks about how to use your own intuition, like what is your intuition? Because some people are clairvoyant, some are clairsentient. So it helps you figure that out, as well as how to use that on an investigation, how to cleanse yourself, how to protect yourself. It's a great resource, I think.
It's a good resource. If when you're going, do you prefer to go by yourself or do you want to go with a team usually?
Usually with at least like a couple other people, like one or two other people. I don't like a large group because then it gets to the energy's too scattered. And then I like to try to pick up things intuitively. And when it's a large group, I kind of am getting stuff from the people, as you know, intuition from the people as well as the location, and it can get kind of muddled. But yeah, one or two people is good because it does help, you know, if you hear something to turn to the person you're with. Did you hear that also? Did you see that also? Uh-huh. Yeah.
When you get the recordings of like the Laughing Man and you've got people that are crying or whatever, do you just keep your recorders going like all the time that you're in the location so you can pick things up?
So Indiana State is one location that pretty much the entire time I'm there, I'm recording, whether it's on a digital recorder or I'm filming with my camera, something, because there's so much at that place. But generally, no, sometimes I'll record, like if I sit down, you know, to do like an EVP session or something, I'll record that. Otherwise, I like to kind of just ask questions and then play it back in the moment to see what we got.
Wow. Do you have more recordings of audio or video?
Probably video. I like to record video because, I mean, you're getting the visual, but you're also getting audio. So there's been a lot of times, too, where I'm just recording just a quick video to make for social media, not even actively asking questions or investigating. And I've gotten voices and whispers and things like that in the video, just recording.
You know what? We need to go a little bit deeper with you. I want to find out who is Sharice Williams. We're going to play a little game right now. We're going to play a game of this or that. I'm going to give you two choices. You can pick one or the other, but not neither or both. And I just want to see where we go with this whole thing. This is fascinating to me.
Am I allowed to give my reasoning or do you just want my answer?
Oh, your reasoning would be super helpful.
Okay.
And we'll go with, let's start with some easy questions and let's just go with the things that are out there. Okay. Real or hoax, Roswell?
Real.
Okay. By the way, who's your audience, seekers or skeptics?
I like seekers because skeptics are kind of not fun, but I like it with like a healthy dose of skepticism, I think is realistic and refreshing.
Okay.
But not the people that are like, it doesn't matter what you say or do or show them or anything, that they're just, you know, the people that are like, they're not actually trying to expand their mind or see things from a different perspective. The ones that are there to just like, their mission is to disprove. Like, mm-hmm. That's not fun.
Gotcha. All right. So that, I like that answer. Where do you begin your research? Forgotten lore or mainstream myths?
Ooh. That's hard, but I'll go with lore. I like to start with the lore and then see where that takes me.
Gotcha. You know, find some high-tech ghost.
I mean, I would. That'd be interesting, but yeah.
Okay. How about a haunted Victorian mansion or modern-day skyscraper?
Oh, Victorian mansion all day, any day.
Yeah. Now, do ghosts haunt, you know, high, you know, modern skyscrapers or not?
Yeah. A place doesn't have to be old to be haunted.
Okay. Do they have to, what has to happen for a place to be haunted?
That's again, another, I mean, there's a lot of speculation, especially there, you know, I think some hauntings are actually just the emotions that are left behind at a place. That's why I think places like hospitals are usually super haunted. So while we may not be actually connecting with like the soul of a person, we're kind of just feeling the energies that have been left behind. Okay. But yeah, I mean, usually if there is kind of something traumatic that happens or like a big emotional event that occurs, that can kind of contribute to a haunting.
Okay. How about your toolkit, scientific instruments or spiritual practices?
spiritual practices.
Okay. Now, when you say that, and then you tell people these are actual ghosts, don't you have to get them past the spiritual practices part first to get them to the actual haunting part?
Can you rephrase that? I'm not
sure. Well, in other words, if you say I'm a psychic or I'm a witch and I believe that I found a ghost because this, and this happened, as mm-hmm. opposed to I pulled out my meter, I saw these lights go on and off, I felt this energy and we read the instruments.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you feel it more through psychic and spiritual rather than technology.
Yeah, I do like the technology, but also, I mean, none of this equipment is made to find ghosts because we don't necessarily know what ghosts are and what they are composed of. All of the equipment that we use for ghost hunting is equipment that we've just kind of modified right. for what we think a ghost is.
Like the K2 meters.
Huh?
Like the K2 meters.
Yeah, there can be a lot of user error with some of this equipment as well. You know, like the K2 meter, things like your cell phone can set it off, walkie-talkies can set off REM pods. So there can be a lot of human error, just as the same as if you're using a pendulum or tarot cards, you know, there can kind of be some human user error with that as well. So I don't think people like the scientific equipment because it lights up, because it's kind of something more tangible that you can see, you can touch the equipment. So a lot of people like that versus relying on what somebody may be picking up intuitively, because, you know, if I'm saying I'm feeling this, you have nothing to go by other than mm-hmm. what I'm feeling. But if I'm holding this piece of equipment and you're seeing it light up, you can kind of connect with that experience.
Okay. So would you rather go with or without a psychic medium? Not just a psychic, but a psychic medium.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I I don't need one because I feel I do pretty well intuitively. Okay. But I am always willing to learn from other people, and they may pick up on something that I'm not picking up on. So
okay. What's your philosophy, I guess? Crossing over spirits or letting them be?
I do not believe in crossing over at all, which I actually talk about that in my book. Because again, we may have very strong convictions of this is what happens when we die, but mm-hmm. truly at the end of the day, we don't really know. And so I don't want to try to cross somebody over and send somebody somewhere that I don't know what's happening over there. Okay. You know, I don't truly know what's on the other side of that light. So I'm not going to tell some spirit, yeah, you'll be safe over there. How do I know? I don't really know. Where am I actually sending you?
I don't know, Carol Ann.
Right, go to the light. And then also, I feel like that's their personal spiritual journey. Like I shouldn't be the one to make them go somewhere. They are ready. They can go. They'll figure it out.
What takes precedence, historical research or fresh eyewitness accounts?
I like historical research.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's always fun when you have those personal experiences, those firsthand accounts, like the spirit playing the prank on us with the walkie-talkies and then laughing. And then we find out that they're, you know, the history of that building and the patients that were there, and it correlates. That's like my favorite thing ever.
Gotcha. What do you think most ghosts experience, eternal haunt or passing visitations?
Can you expand on that?
In other words, are they stuck here or they just get to come and go when they want?
I think it's both. I can't pick one or the other. Yeah, okay. It's both, I think. Okay. It depends on the spirit.
We'll let you break the rule on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Where do you see the future of ghost hunting going? Is it world renowned or underground?
It's not going anywhere. The paranormal, ghost hunting, I mean, it's been around since ancient times. Not to quote my book again, but I do talk about like the early beginnings of ghost hunting and paranormal investigating. So it's definitely not going anywhere, but I do see it kind of evolving. I've seen it evolve even just over the last handful of years with social media versus, you know, we used to only be able to see it in books and then on TV, on reality TV. And then now we're seeing it more on social media. So I think it's just going to continue to evolve, especially with different, you know, science that comes out and different pieces of equipment that might be made. But yeah, it's not going anywhere.
Well, so that kind of leads to this question in terms of like pop culture's impact. Is it like helpful for awareness or harmful because of the sensationalism?
Oof. Again, I could talk. I have a lot of opinions. Okay.
Give us a couple.
A lot of opinions. So I think in one way, the fact that like paranormal investigating and ghost hunting is so accessible now, not only for the people who want to go out and investigate, there's so many locations now that you can book and go and investigate, but you know, you can find endless accounts on social media of people investigating. And I think that that's great because it's kind of brought ghost hunting more as like, it's, you know, now when I tell people that I go ghost hunting, people are like, oh, really? Whereas 6 years ago, oh, I go ghost hunting, people would be like, oh, really? Like, so it's definitely helping to make it more of this kind of an everyday conversation, mm-hmm. which I think is excellent. I also think the more people that are out there investigating, the more evidence we might be able to capture, okay. The more, you know, somebody may design some really great piece of equipment that may be the one piece of equipment that actually captures true irrefutable evidence of a ghost. However, because a lot of this is happening on social media, and social media is all about the followers, the subscribers, the views, there are unfortunately a lot of people who are doing it solely for that. And so mm-hmm. they exaggerate, they make up claims, they fake evidence. And that I think can be kind of detrimental to the field, because if you have people faking it, it kind of detracts and takes away from the people who are doing legitimate research and trying to put out actual evidence, which is kind of a bummer. And then because they want the views, the quickest way to get the views is to say something is haunted by a demon, or I got possessed by a demon on this investigation. And I think mm-hmm. that can really be kind of a harmful, kind of harmful.
Just putting this or that aside for just one second, uh-huh. two questions, actually. What do you want to have happen because of ghost hunting? What's the end goal that you want from ghost hunting?
I think to just have, to help people open their minds. Because when you realize that there's so much more to the universe than just what we can see and touch, mm-hmm. It kind of just helps expand your mind. It helps you look at things from a different perspective as well. Also, when you're investigating, you may hear the story of, you know, one of the elderly patients at the nursing home crying, and it kind of can help you connect to your empathy as well. It helps pique your curiosity, which helps to, maybe you want to learn new things. It just really helps to expand people's minds, mm-hmm. I think, and look at things from a different perspective, which I think can then kind of trickle down into other areas of their lives, as well as the empathy that can kind of, you know, maybe you feel really bad for a ghost on an investigation, and then you kind of carry that empathy with you to other people in your life.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if that answer made any sense.
It might make sense. I let me ask you something just kind of whimsical.
Yeah.
I've got so many more questions I want to ask you. If ghosts, if they could vote, who do you think they would support, or what do you think they would want to have happen? What do ghosts want?
Oh, geez. I guess it depends on the ghosts, because there's some, I mean, just like there's some questionable human beings, uh-huh. there's some questionable ghosts as well. So yeah, I'm not really sure. You'd have to ask the individual spirit on that.
When you come over and check my kitchen ghost, we'll ask them. So let's keep on the scientific, okay? Mm-hmm. So quantum physics, it's really big these days in the realm of spirituality. Is it an intriguing intersection, or is it just mere speculation?
I think pretty much any topic having to do with spirituality, the paranormal, supernatural, all of that is just science that hasn't been, you know, really discovered yet or replicated mm-hmm. in a lab or given a scientific name yet. I always kind of compare that to germ theory. You know, there were theories that there were these little things that we can't see with our eye, but they're making us sick. Mm-hmm. And people thought that you were Looney Tunes if you thought that, like, what are you talking about? And then we invented microscopes and you could actually see that, okay, wait, these things are real, and oh, maybe we should start washing our hands. So it's kind of that, you know, I wouldn't doubt that one day we will be able to kind of create maybe some sort of camera or something where you just hold it up and you can see here's a spirit here, or yeah, some other way to fully prove it.
Okay. I would love to see that technology, but that'll come up right around the same time the, what do you call it? AGI, the artificial general intelligence comes up, and we're all going to be like, what do you think's risk here? Over-reliance on technology or underestimating spiritual powers?
Which is more risky? Underestimating spiritual powers.
Okay.
Yeah. There's, like I said, there's so much unseen that we aren't aware of. I mean, there's so much just about our own human brains that we don't fully understand yet. And that's in our heads.
Yes.
So yeah, there's energies out there. There's energies and worlds within our own brains that we don't fully understand yet. And I think that it's very important to acknowledge that and to really work on your own intuition. So when things like the artificial intelligence comes out, you can rely on your own guidance system, internal guidance system, as to discern, okay, is this real what I'm seeing? Or is this maybe I should be asking some questions.
That'll be an interesting discussion with the AI or with the aliens or with anyone else, like ghost exists and like, yes. See what everyone comes up with.
I would be very curious about aliens' ideas of ghosts, which there's actually theories that paranormal activity and some ghosts could actually be aliens. So there's talk about intersections. There's intersections of that, or even that Bigfoot is a ghost or Bigfoot is an alien. It can get pretty wild in this field.
Bigfoot's another whole discussion. Oh my God. There's a article someone showed me recently. It's like, we finally have 4K footage of Bigfoot. Ooh. And it was from like a mile away and there was a dot that was moving. I'm like, that's Bigfoot. Like, come on, guys.
Hey, but it's in 4K.
It's in 4K though, yes. So, exploring other dimensions, is that an exciting possibility or a dangerous endeavor?
I have to just pick one and follow the rules. It's exciting.
Yeah. It's exciting. What do you want? If you could just pop over to another dimension, what would be the first thing you explore?
Honestly, I'd pop over and see relatives that have passed on, as well as ancestors that I never met. Like, I never met my great grandma, but she's one of my main guides. I've always felt her near me. So I would love to go to a dimension and actually get to like spend time with her.
In your mind, if you could pop over to the dimension and actually talk to past relatives, would they be young again, or would they be how you remember them, or just spirit blobs that float around? What would be your want or desire?
I would want it to be where it's, you know, because I am a physical being, I would want it to be more like that, where I'm getting to sit down with her physical self. And I would prefer it to be as I see pictures of her, as, you know, when she was older. But I don't know. I mean, it's kind of the same way as people say, well, how do ghosts present themselves to people? And right. I think it could either be how the spirit is choosing to present themselves to you, or it could be how your intuition or your mind is perceiving that energy. So yeah. She may be just presenting herself, my great grandma, as, you know, a ball of light, but my brain is perceiving that energy as her physical appearance.
Gotcha. When you see or hear the ghost in the sanatorium, that just fascinates me, by the way, still. How are you perceiving them, or how are they presenting themselves?
So for myself, intuitively, my main intuitive gift is just claircognizance. So it's almost like I just know. People say, you know, like, well, how do you know that your name is Charisse? Well, I know my name is Charisse. Like, I know it. So I get information like that. So I'll just kind of know that there's a man standing here. Well, how do you know? I don't know. I just know that there's a man standing there. Other times I may actually get an image of them in my head. And then a lot of the time too, it's just a feeling.
So wait, when you have the man standing there, like you go like, yeah, he's right there. Mm-hmm. If you move toward him, does he move, or do you walk and you stand in the same space as him? What happens when you see that?
Yeah, they'll move sometimes. Like sometimes I'll approach and I can feel that they're moving away. Or a lot of the time it's almost like they just like blip, like, I don't know, like blip out of the space. Like, okay. I'll feel somebody in a room And it's like, as soon as I go into the room, they're gone. And I'm like, okay, well.
I got a couple more for you. So in regards to public skepticism, is it a barrier to work or a catalyst for more rigorous methods for you?
What was the first option? Catalyst, well, or
it's either a barrier to work, you know, or is it a catalyst for making more rigorous methods?
If I'm actively investigating with somebody who's a skeptic, I think it's more of a hindrance because I feel their naysayer energy. Like they put that so much into the environment, it can stop activity, honestly, and it can make it hard to pick up on the energies that are in the building because you're feeling so heavily their like poo-pooing energy. So that can definitely be a hindrance.
Well, how many people have gone from skeptic to believer because they've worked with you or they've read your book or they've done anything and they go like, yep, this is real?
I don't know if I've had, like, I can't think of anybody that was like definite skeptic and then they're like, okay, I believe. Yeah, I'm not sure. Cause I think pretty much everybody I've come into contact with, at least that I'm aware of, whether they've read my book or I've investigated with them, they may be kind of skeptical, but they're open to it. Like my husband, he's definitely very one of those, like, it could have been this, like he tries to explain away anything and everything that he can, but he is still kind of open to it. Like he had an experience when he was like 13 or 14. We were actually just talking about it yesterday. And I was like, well, how do you explain that? He's like, I can't. That was a ghost. I'm like, well, so you can say that was a ghost. But then, you know, if you're in this like creepy old building with me, like, so yeah, it's funny.
Do you get him to go into the sanatorium with you? Sanitarium.
He actually has been to the sanatorium with me. And I also like to do just a lot of abandoned exploring, like going out to the country and finding like old abandoned farmhouses and stuff. And he likes to do that with me as well. So,
gotcha. Just as a last fun question. Mm-hmm. If there were no ghosts, what would you be hunting?
Knowledge. Okay. And also, I mean, there's so many ghosts are just one type of spirit. There's nature spirits, there's angels, you know, there's so many different types of spirits. So I think I would still be trying to connect to the spirit world. But yeah, I mean, if not, yeah, just knowledge.
I think it's interesting that you separate ghosts from all the others, because then that leaves another whole realm that people could go into and explore.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see exploring angels, exploring anything. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you, Charisse. I want people to stay in touch with you. This has been amazing. They can do that easily over on your website, Charisse Williams. For everybody that is listening instead of watching, Charisse is spelled C-H-E-R-I-S-E, Charisse Williams. .com. So that's one word, CharisseWilliams.com. You're also over on YouTube, Charisse1218. We'll let everyone guess what the 1218 is. And then you're also on Instagram and TikTok at CharisseWilliams.xo. And people can find you all in all those places. Everybody, thank you for sticking around watching this over here on A Funny Way of Looking. You can find us also over on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. It's all A Funny Way of Looking. Find us over there. And also don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. Charisse is going to be there again. And I think about 2 weeks, we'll have an article about her. And you can also watch this replay now or in the future. We love having you there. And while you're at it, everyone who's watching, pop over right now, sign up for the newsletter at afunnywayoflooking.news. It'll take you to the website. You can see all kinds of other guests that have been there. Charisse, you've been amazing. I absolutely love what we've been talking about, and we're going to check out those scary drawers over there one day.
Yes, definitely. Whenever you want to talk spooky again, I am here for it.
I love spooky. All right, thank you, and everybody else, we'll see you again in a couple of days. Bye-bye. Bye.